Welcome to SciSection. My name is Shanessa Furtado, and I'm your journalist for the SciSection radio show broadcasted on CFMU 93.3 FM radio station. We are here today with Rula Faraj, a PhD candidate at the University of Toronto in the field of philosophy of science. Rula does research in the history, philosophy, and sociology of science, with a particular focus on the physical sciences. Thank you for joining us today, Rula.
Thank you for having me.
So, to get us started, can you tell us about your educational and career background and how you got started in your field?
Right now, I'm a PhD student at the Institute for the History and Philosophy of Science and Technology at the University of Toronto. I did an undergraduate double major at York University in cognitive science and in science and technology studies. And I also did a master's at York University in science and technology studies.
That's a really interesting career path. So, to follow up that question, what made you interested in pursuing this specific area of science?
I would say that I've always been an inquisitive person. I mean, maybe even a little too inquisitive. So I always wanted to understand the external world, and I always wanted to understand how we as human beings understand the external world. Also, my dad he was an avid reader of just about any subject under the sun, and we always had books about philosophy and physics, and so that definitely influenced me.
So for our next question, your research involves the history, philosophy, and sociology of physical sciences. Can you explain what that entails and how you conduct research in these areas?
Right. So how I conduct research is basically conceptual analysis and methodological analysis. Analysis at the level of science, but also analysis at the level of the analysis of science. So it's a little meta in that sense. What I mean by analysis of science is, as you mentioned, the history, philosophy, and sociology of science. So we have these three approaches. History of science, some approaches look at, you know, the final product of science, theories and how theories change into other theories throughout history. The philosophy of science looks at foundations, methodologies, implications of science. And then in sociology, some approaches look at the individual scientist and how they're influenced by the scientific community around them, or also how they're influenced by the broader social context around them. And they look at how these influences affected the ways in which they constructed their scientific theories. So with these three approaches, we get really good insight into science. But the problem is that they don't integrate very well with one another. There's too many disagreements between them. And right now I'm focusing on a disagreement between philosophical pluralism and sociological relativism. And what I'm doing is I'm developing a historiography. So basically a new method for doing the history of science, which considers the psychology of science. So basically how we cognitively construct models and theories. And through this psychological approach, I'm finding that we are better able to integrate the history, philosophy, and sociology of science in a much smoother way, and in a way where we're able to broaden and deepen our understanding of science.
All those different areas at first, when you hear them separately, sound very different. So it is definitely intriguing to see how they connect. I'm sure being in your position right now did not happen easily. You must have had to overcome a lot of challenges, especially with having a disability. Could you tell us about some of the challenges you faced along the way and how you overcame them?
So yeah, I'm visually impaired. When I was 7 years old, I lost my central vision due to a condition called Stargardt's disease. And a few years ago, I had a separate health incident where I was diagnosed with a brain tumor. Luckily, everything's okay. But it definitely exacerbated my disability, and it hasn't been an easy road. But I managed thanks to a wonderful support system, amazing friends and family, wonderful supervisors even. At the master's level, my supervisor was Professor Bernard Lightman, and currently my supervisor is Professor Yiftach Fahig. and they've just been incredible. I mean, it's not just that they understood that I was a student with disabilities, but they accepted and encouraged me as an ambitious student with disabilities. You know, they recognized my determination. They knew that I would work hard. They never gave me a sense that what I'm pursuing is too ambitious. They gave me the space that I needed to develop my ideas. And I mean, if it wasn't for that, I never would have won an SSHRC grant called the Joseph Armand Bombardier Scholarship, which funded me for 3 years. So definitely the support system, the supervisors really helped me manage.
That's really inspiring, and I think it highlights how important it is to have a supportive community surrounding you. And connecting to that question, do you have any advice for students who have a disability and want to pursue research?
My general advice would be accessible technologies. I mean, I'm still learning about the types of accessibility technologies that are out there. And there's a lot out there that could help anyone with any disability. At the level of the university, I mean, look into accessibility services. My experience at York and at U of T has been phenomenal. They help you manage your way through your program. They help you figure out accommodations. So yeah, definitely look into accessibility technologies and accessibility services at the university that are available.
Absolutely. I think that's really great advice. And for our next question, at the core of your research, you question objectivity. Can you elaborate on how the role of ambiguity can provide clarity in understanding how cognition and socializing play a role in the development of scientific knowledge?
Right. So there's a lot of elements in that question, so I'll try to fit everything in. So the historiography that I'm developing is based on a quote by Einstein that says that scientific thinking is nothing more than a refinement of everyday thinking. And this is particularly relevant and interesting because Einstein's special theory of relativity ushered in a whole new era in physics where we no longer knew how to link scientific thinking with everyday thinking. So if you think about in our everyday experiences, when you're playing pool, right, if you have a billiard ball that moves from point A to point B in a straight line, and then it hits a second billiard ball at point B, and then the second billiard ball moves from point B to point C. In this scenario, you have a trajectory, you have a causal relation between the objects. And that's sort of how we understand an example of how we understand how objects interact in our everyday experiences. But objects in special relativity and objects in quantum mechanics don't behave that way. There's a strangeness in how they behave, and we don't know anymore how to connect scientific thinking with everyday thinking. We don't know how these objects relate to everyday objects and everyday interactions. And the role of ambiguity, the way that I'm presenting it, is that the way that we cognitively manage ambiguity in our everyday thinking and in our everyday interactions is the same way that we manage ambiguity at the scientific level. But beyond that, we recognize that there are shortcuts that scientists have made and that scientists have been very explicit in making. And by keeping in mind sort of the way that we manage ambiguity and the shortcuts that have been made, we can go back to understanding what Einstein meant by scientific thinking is a refinement of everyday thinking.
That is a great breakdown of such a complex topic, and kind of building on that question, one of your areas of interest is looking at the philosophy of perception. What role do you think perception has in the development of science, and specifically in the scientific community?
Yeah, so although there's been skepticism in the philosophy of science about the role of perception, if we go back to this idea that scientific thinking is a refinement of everyday thinking, we find that there is a role for perception in science. There's a view in the philosophy of perception, and even in the philosophy of science, that argues that we don't see reality as it really is. All we have is a representation of it. So, for example, if you were looking at a sunset and you're painting this sunset, the painting of the sunset would be a representation of the sunset that you're observing. But that sunset also, it's argued, is a representation of something out there that we don't know how it really is. All we know is what it looks like to us. So in that sense, perception is taken beyond just immediate observation, and it's extended into memory and into imagination. So if I were to tell you, imagine opening your front door and looking out into your front lawn, or imagine climbing on top of the rooftop of your childhood home and looking out into the street from that perspective. Even though now you're not looking out into your front lawn, or you may never have even climbed up the rooftop of your childhood home and seen your street from that perspective, you're still able to imagine it. And these cognitive tools that we use in our everyday lives, and that we use especially to manage ambiguity in our everyday lives, are the same cognitive tools that we use in our scientific thinking and in managing ambiguity in our scientific thinking. We use them when we want to build visual models, or we use it when we perform thought experiments. So a thought experiment is basically an experiment that you imagine, maybe because you can't actually perform it in reality. But somehow in the history of science, it's proven to be a really powerful tool because we've drawn conclusions from these imagined scenarios, and these conclusions have actually led to progress in science. So it's in that sense that perception plays a role in science.
And for our last question, what do you think the scientific community needs right now?
Recognizing the role of ambiguity, definitely. We focus a lot on the successful parts of science. We focus on the successful theories, the final product. What I try to bring in is, okay, let's look at how we cognitively built up these theories from principles to models to theories, how these evolved over time, how we overcame ambiguity in the process, and especially the ways in which we developed shortcuts to overcome ambiguity. And I think it's very important for us to keep track of these shortcuts. I think that will be the key to solving a lot of the problems in science and in the analysis of science. Ambiguity is definitely a big one.
That's great insight, and it even highlights the importance of social science in research and in the scientific community in general. So those are all our questions for today, and I would like to thank you for joining us today, Rula. Hearing about your experiences and career path and how you overcame so many obstacles was very inspiring.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you again, and that's it for this week of SciSection. I'm your journalist, Shanessa Furtado, and make sure to check our podcast available on global platforms for our latest interviews.